Well, Gurmukh Vichar is such a loose sort of thing. What I was hoping that we could do is, anyone that has any questions, just write them on a piece of paper and send them here. I don't need to know who wrote it, and it can be any sort of a question, no matter how trivial, or don't be afraid of offending me, because I probably won't be offended. I was thinking we might be able to start off talking a bit about the last lecture. Does anyone have any questions or comments about the topic in the last lecture? What up, Hanji? There's no other option then. If someone doesn't understand Punjabi, then of course there's no other option but to converse with them in English. The thing is, my first language is English, but I can also converse pretty fluently in Punjabi, just because my parents, when they came, they only spoke Punjabi with me. But I have a younger sister, and she's in university, and she can't speak Punjabi at all, because once I was born, my parents were already into the Western culture, and I spoke with her in English, and they spoke with her in English, and she's lost it. And will she be able to have her children speak Punjabi? It's not likely, right? So if we aren't very, very, very comfortable in Punjabi, as we move on through the generation, it's going to be lost. And I had a friend that I used to study with in university. He was a Jew. And he was a religious Jew. And he said, I asked him, do you read your Jewish scriptures? And he said, yes. I said, and you're fluent? And he said, yes. I said, and do you understand what you're reading? He said, I haven't a clue. He could have been reading, I am stupid, I am dumb, this is garbage. And he wouldn't have had any clue. He would have been just reading it very, very, you know, devotedly. But he had no clue what he was saying. So that's important, that we understand Punjabi and Gurmukhi, because if someone understands Punjabi, half the battle's won in understanding Gurbani. Because a lot of the words that you'll read in Gurbani, you can pick up just from Punjabi. They're very similar. So that's why English, as much as possible, should be limited. Because we speak English anyways outside. When we're out and about in our jobs and school, we speak English. But amongst ourselves, we should try and make an effort to speak in Punjabi, otherwise we're going to lose it. I think Punjabis are probably the only community that are afraid of speaking Punjabi to each other. If you see Chinese people, they generally speak in Chinese. Arabs, I think, where I'm from, they speak in Arabic. But Punjabis, two Punjabis will meet, and they'll try and speak English. I went to work in a factory again during one of my summers, and five or six Punjabis came for their first day. And before, you know, for the orientation, I was there as well. There's one Hindi-speaking woman. All five of those Punjabi speakers started speaking Hindi amongst each other and with that woman. They didn't try and ask that Hindi speaker, you know, to try and speak Punjabi. They themselves adapted. I'm not sure why that is, but we're too quick to give up Punjabi. Any other questions about what was said today, earlier? Hanji. Absolutely. Even if you don't understand what's being said, Gurbani is not just words. Gurbani is the word of God, and I guarantee you, if you read Gurbani, you'll get the experience that there's some sort of a magic to it. Magic is such a cheesy word. But there's magic in Bani. Bani can transform someone just through its vibration. Gursikhs that get to higher stages, they'll talk to you about vibrations. And for example, someone asked yesterday, why do people keep Sadlo? Sadlo has such a powerful vibration that in spirituality, it's very, very beneficial. There's some people that have bhakti from previous lives, that even before they start, before they shakt amrit, they saw Sarablo and they tasted something in Sarablo, they felt Sarablo, and they said, this is something special, and they started keeping Sarablo. So vibration of Bani is something that automatically will affect you. You'll feel Bani. there was a Western lady, and she was at a kirtan, and she had tears of bara coming down her face. And a Punjabi asked her afterwards, you know, that was a very baragi shabd. Do you understand Punjabi? I don't understand it, but somehow I just feel it. I know what the shabd is because I can feel it. So, bani, even if you don't understand it, it's paras. It'll transform you no matter what. But of course, vichara of bani is very important. Anything else about today's topic? Bani will work on anybody. Bani will work on a prostitute. Bani will work on a brahmgyani. Bani will work on any human being. Bani will change you. And that's what I encouraged yesterday. There were some sings that came to speak with us that about Sikhi. I said, no matter what I speak now, it's really of no use. I might be able to influence you for a day or two, but you're going to forget me. You're going to forget anything I said. If you take anything from what I say, it's this. Guru Sahib is an experience. Sikhi is an experience. It's not an intellectual thought process. Sikhi is an experience. And once you taste it, you'll want more. Guru Sikhi isn't even a promise. Like Islam promises, you become a Muslim and you'll get paradise. If you accept Jesus into your heart, Jesus will take care of you to send you to heaven. Guru Sahib says this much, that you become my Sikh, I'll help you. But that doesn't mean you stop walking. You have to seek the experience. And if you don't want the experience, you don't want to seek the experience, then don't expect it.
Some people feel and they change. Some people understand it and they keep listening and they don't change. It doesn't have an effect on them. My husband, for instance.
Some people, Sanji said that some people feel it and some people don't. They've been reading it for years and years. One, I can say, depends on your karma. Some people have such good karma that even reading one shabd will transform it. Some people have such bad karma, like myself, that we've been reading it for years and years, and it might not have an effect on us the way it should. So it all depends on our karma. And it also depends on our intention. There's a businessman, more than one, actually. He's a Mona in Toronto. He's a real estate agent. And as a Nithiname, he does one Sukhmani Sahib. And he'll tell anyone that goes to him that I am successful today because I promised Guru Sahib I'll do Sukhmani Sahib every day in return for good business. And you can get physical things, material things through Bani. But he's not doing it for any spiritual benefit and he's still a Mona. So it depends on what you're doing the Bani for as well.
I understand everything they said, and they've got enough testers and become home. We haven't picked all of you, but he's picked every little bit up. He hasn't, it doesn't have an effect on
him. Sometimes we don't know if it's having an effect. For example, my father, he's a Mona, and he's been going to Gurdwara for quite a while, and only recently have I noticed any sort of an effect on him. If you have a jug filled with water and it's all dirty, it's brown, and there's a tap coming of clean water, it's going to start changing very slowly. And we might not know it, but Bani will change it. It's having an effect. It might not be the dramatic effect we want, but it's having some effect.
It'll have an effect even if you don't study the meanings.
If you don't study the meanings, I mentioned as before that it will have an effect, but not as much. Bani vidlo vichasi. Only very rare gurmukhs will concentrate on Bani. But if someone concentrates on Bani, that'll transform you even faster. Every tok in Bani is so deep, it's an ocean. Bhai Sabanji Singhji, who's my inspiration to come into to become a better Sikh, he used to do shabd of one shabd. And he could spend a whole night on that shabd. And Gursikhs that listen to Pai Sahib's Kirtan say that he would read that shabd, that one line, and it would have one meaning. And then he'd read it again, and just through his kumai, it would hit again in such a way that the meaning, the feeling that we feel would change. So every shabd is an ocean. This is God's word, not just some man's poetry. This is God's word. So, if you have questions, I'll shut up for about a minute or two for you to write down whatever you have.
Haji, any of you have some questions from yesterday's discussion?
I do.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll go through them first. There's a shabd that people that want to eat meat, I was actually one of them. I shabd amrit when I was 15, and I shabd amrit at a place where they said, you can eat meat if you want. And I was a pretty ignorant person. I didn't even know what amrit irla was. And they said, if you want to eat meat, it's your choice. So I ate meat for another year. And they have a shabd that they use, people that support meat, out of Guru Granth Sahib. And one of the lines is, maas maas kar murk chade, that over meat people, only fools argue. And another line in that shabd goes, that kaun maas kaun saak kahave, and where does the sin lie, in maas or saak? Do you know? And when I read this, I said, yeah, look, Guru Sahib saying saag, green leafy vegetables, are the same as maas. What's the difference? But if you delve into that shabd and you ask other Gursikhs, what does that mean? Maas and saag can be equally bad. This is what it's saying. If you go and eat the sabji of someone that earned that money by slitting someone's throat, or robbing someone, or by cheating someone, then that saag, even though it's vegetarian, will have an equally poisonous effect on you, or if not even more so than a morsel of meat. So Guru Sahib is not saying that maas and saag are the same. Guru Sahib is saying for someone without gyan, without a guru to give gyan, someone eating saag, a vegetarian diet, like a pandit, like a brahman, who lives his life reading people's hands, acha, your fortune line is wonderful, taking money for this. That money, buying vegetables, will not make him more spiritual, because that's just as bad, because he tugged people, he cheated people to get it. So that's why maas and saag can be just as bad for someone without a guru.
Just one more question. If anyone's interested in that, there's an excellent little tract, a very thin booklet downstairs on the table in the lumber room with all the Bibles that are being sold at the moment. It's called A Why Kill a Chicken by someone called Baiji Nusin Talwara. It's an excellent book. A lot of people who used to eat meat, having read that, have got a very deep understanding as to why, you know, Gursikhs don't eat dead animals.
If you can read that book and still believe in meat, I challenge you to come speak with me. No one who eats meat and reads that book will say that it's okay according to Gursikhi. There's no way. It's impossible. There's just so many examples.
So either people are saying, you know, you eat meat for vegetables or vegetables, they are going under some more religious involvement and so on. So you are saying, you know, I have an answer, I just want you to know.
When you're walking every day and you're breathing, and even when you're eating dain, you're eating and inhaling countless organisms. We aren't jains. Jains carry a broom. There's a sect of jains that carry a broom and sweep before they go. And they wear kapda over their mouths, so they don't inhale anything. We're not jains. What's wrong for us is to eat kutta. Kutta means an animal that has been butchered, specifically for meat. But if something is inhaled through our nostrils and we kill it, and we had nothing to do with that, because butchering an animal takes a lack of daya, mercy. If you kill an animal that's screaming and begging for its life, because pigs, I don't know if pigs or any other cows, don't go quietly to their death. They go screaming and crying and begging. Veal, when a calf is separated from its mother, do you think it goes quietly? Do you think that mother wants to see its baby calf being led away? And do you think that person leading that calf away is going to get mercy from Guru Sahib and God if that human couldn't show mercy to anything? I don't think that someone that kills an animal just because it tastes good can get mercy from Guru Sahib or God. And that person can't be a spiritual person. Can you see Guru Nanak Dev Ji working in a butcher shop covered in blood? If not, then I don't think meat is possible. So there's a difference between inhaling, which lacks no mercy, you can't do anything about it, versus cutting something's throat, which lacks complete mercy.
There's a question about the stomach I couldn't answer. Vegetables are living things. So we're not killing them.
When you pull a gadget out of the ground, I don't think it's ever screamed. And a potato has never run away from me either. So I didn't need to be a bloodthirsty person to cut that gadget or that onion. It doesn't lack any bloodthirstiness on your part. My chacha, he was murdered. He used to be a taxi driver. Someone stabbed him in the back of the neck. My cousin came from India, started eating meat, and he came to visit me after. This was about 5-6 years ago. And we were talking. He said, I gave up meat. And I said, why? You used to eat it so much. You said there was nothing wrong with it. He said, they killed my father by stabbing him in the neck. And I was thinking, if that person could stab my father in the neck like that, it's just almost the same thing, he said, for me to kill a chicken the same way. I'm killing an animal, a screaming animal, the same way. And I don't think it's right. I can't eat it. So if you just think about how that animal has been killed, you'll realize that there's no mercy in it. And if you lack mercy, if you lack compassion, you can never, ever be a dharmic person. Because dharm is born out of mercy and compassion. If you want to be a religious person, then you have to have compassion and mercy. If someone lacks compassion and mercy and they claim to be religious, then it's a false show. That's what I was thinking in my mind. Jabdi Sahib tells us that dharm is daya ka poot. Dharm, religiosity, faith, spirituality, is the child of daya. Only when you feel compassion and mercy are you going to be a religious person.
Paisan, do you believe that the animal you eat take on the karma?
This I don't know. You know,
understanding the body was the best way in doing it. I know it's probably thinking about it, contemplating the meaning, but people who don't understand the body, they get translation. But what's the best way to do it? How to understand the body?
If you don't understand Gurbani, the best thing to do is to go to someone that does understand Gurbani. Not just one person, like a Sangat. But finding Sangat is something that Guru Sahib says is very difficult. I'm very lucky. Whatever I am today is because of Sangat. Without Sangat, I was nothing. But these good Sikhs that I've done Sangat with have been able to take me and essentially cared for me like I was their child. And they took the time to answer every single one of my stupid questions. And that's why I don't mind if someone asks me any question they want, because I've asked stupider questions. I believed in the Khalistan movement, but I wasn't really sure if I believed in God. So I was a hardcore Sikh, but I didn't really believe in God. And I went from there to, again, believing in God, which is a very big jump, just because these good Sikhs answered my question. So my answer to your question is, finding Sangat where there's other people that have the same interest as you and asking the question, what does this mean? And together reflecting on it. At the University of Toronto where I studied, we just had a small group of 6 or 7 young people that we used to get together on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we used to just take one shabd and grab 2 or 3 translations because we didn't have any gyan ourselves. And just went through the translations, comparing them and reflecting ourselves. And that's what I would encourage you to do. Because when you're with other people, they'll encourage you, they'll pull you. When you're here, watch, you'll want to be a Sikh. But when you go home, and if you don't have Sangat there, you're going to forget all of this. It's going to be a temporary high. But if you have good Sikhs or contacts that you made here, then you might talk about that, and it might increase. Sangat is essential for anything you do in spirituality. Once you've done your questions, just put them here. I'll start off with yesterday's questions. Someone asked, what is the first step in Sikhi? Is it Amrit or something else? The first step in Sikhi, again, this is Gurmukh Vichar, not Balpreet Singh lecturing. And I honestly am not a spiritual Gosikh, that I'm Brahm Gyani. Someone asked, have you seen Sachkhand? I assure you, I haven't seen Sachkhand. I haven't seen anything. Again, the only thing I know is what other Gursikhs have told me. So I could be completely misguided as well. So if you guys have something to add, make sure you do. Does anyone have any comments on what's the first step in Sikhi? Is it Amrit or something else?
When you apply that method, that amrit in you, it will go much stronger, so much powerful. You will stay much more stronger than the guru, so it will have much more powerful effect than you won't break your way.
So first step you think is bani?
Yeah, nama bani.
No.
Finding your guru.
Finding your guru. Finding your guru. That's true. I think even before that, one step that I had to go through is learning that you know nothing. Learning that you're stupid. That you can't really do anything for yourself. As long as you think that you are capable of giving yourself happiness, that you through your brain can give yourself happiness, you don't need a guru. Because your brain is your guru. When you offer your head to Guru Sahib, it's more than just a symbolic gesture of giving your head. It has a meaning. It means that I quit. I can't do this. I can't run my own life because I'm making a mess of it. I feel sad, I feel lonely, I feel empty. And I've tried so many different things to fill that void in me. And I couldn't do it. Now Guru Sahib, you promised me something and I trust you. And Guru Sahib, I swear to you, if you put your trust in Guru Sahib won't let you down. If you have one friend is Guru Sahib. No one else will be able to do what Guru Sahib does. You have no other friend except for Guru Sahib. Other friends will leave you in your hard times. Other friends will give you bad advice even though they mean well. Guru Sahib is there for you in terms of Guru Granth Sahib. You can ask us access anytime. In terms of Guru Sahib working in your life, seeing His hand in your life, you'll see so many coincidences and stuff like this that you'll know Guru Sahib is working in your life. But as long as you think that you can run your own life, that you think you're doing a good job, you don't need a guru then. You're your own guru. So when you quit, I can't do this anymore, then you're going to start looking for a guru. And then I think Sikhi is something that you're going to have to think about. And Guru Nanak Dev Ji is definitely the guru that you have to go to, because he's the only one that's going to speak to you like the way he is. No other prophet, I don't think, even wrote anything for anyone else. Guru Nanak Dev Ji, whatever he said 500 years ago, he's saying today. Jesus, God knows what he said. Who knows what Muhammad said? Who knows what has been cut out, what has been added? I don't know. Whatever Guru Nanak said then, whatever Guru Nanak said then is what he's saying now. So, Amrit though, once you pick Guru Nanak as your guru, then the first step is that giving up the four kurats. Because unless we have a commitment to something, we don't follow through. I don't know if you audit courses here in the UK, but in Canada we can audit courses. You don't have to register, but you can sit through the whole course and you can learn everything. You don't get graded on it. But there's no commitment. I've wanted to audit so many courses. And I might even sit in on a lecture. But because I had no commitment to it, I never finished. I never even got very far. So in the same way, if you don't make a commitment to Guru Sahib, it's very difficult. And the four kurats that a Sikh cannot do And if they do it, Guru Sahib says, you've fallen. And Guru Sahib will forgive you. But, you know, you don't want to lose your trust like that. The first is keeping your case. You can't cut your case. The second is having extramarital relations. Be that premarital or having an affair after marriage, having any sort of sexual or illicit relations with anybody. Third is eating meat. Eggs fall into that as well. Because again, like I said, mercy gives birth to spirituality, and if you don't have that, then how are you going to start? And the final is any sort of intoxication. Be it liquor, tobacco, marijuana, anything like that. So giving these four things up will make your life a proper vase to accept the amrit that Guru Sahib is going to put in you. And amrit is then an essential thing that every Sikh has to go through. So I don't know if amrit is the first step. Amrit is definitely the first step to move towards God. Because without Naam, you can't move towards God. So amrit is definitely a huge step that's essential. You can't have Sikhi without amrit. But figuring out that you're stupid probably comes before that.
I would say the first step to Sikhi is having the will and determination to accept that Guru Nanak and Guru Granth Sahib is your guru, and to say that amrit is not the first step, that is towards God, and that you've got to have the determination to accept it and not just say, yeah, it is. That's why.
We've been brought up in Western culture, and sometimes when I listen to other people, I wish I could be more Punjabi. I mean, right now, I wish I could just tell you what I really felt in my heart, that all of us, unless we shuck amrit, our Sikhi really isn't going to go anywhere. That something that you really have to do to get anywhere in your spirituality. And the sad part is, out of our group here, even at this camp, most of us are going to end up being spiritual failures. Just because we don't have that motivation, we don't have the commitment. But if you really want this, and ask Guru Sahib for it, do a das for it, otherwise we're not going to keep it, we're going to lose it. If we have this thought in our mind today, how many thoughts have we had in our mind? How many wishes and goals and desires have we had? How many times have we needed to follow up? Never. My cousin was 13. He argued with his parents, "Main amrit chakna, main amrit chakna." They said, "Wait a year or two, you're so young." They convinced him. What is he today? He's a banker with a shaved dada. He has a pag on his head, but he really wanted to cut his hair, but his parents didn't let him. He has no idea what Sikhi is anymore. He had that idea, it left. If you have the idea today, how do you know it's going to be there tomorrow? And what are you going to do to make sure it stays there?